You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. Welcome to the program, A Good Book. This is part 14, which will be the last part of the book, Late for the Bus, an adoption story, finding my birth parents, Jerry and Joanne Buss. I'm your volunteer reader, Lee Close, and I am also the author of the book. This is the true story of finding my birth parents after years of fruitless searching, only to discover that I am the eldest daughter of Dr. Gerald Buss, the multimillionaire, legendary owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, and his wife, Joanne. On the previous broadcast, I was given the Old Testament name of Miriam to study at a women's retreat at the Franciscan Casa in Scottsdale, Arizona. I also learned that my birth name, Marie, was a derivative of Miriam, which translates as Sea of Sorrows, and I wondered if it was possible that my birth mother knew that. There were also more phone calls from my youngest sister, Janie, and the Lakers-Suns game with Aunt Susan, who told the Suns fan that I was the eldest daughter of Dr. Gerald Buss. The highlight was the flight to Las Vegas to meet my birth mother, who was in the last stages of Alzheimer's, nonverbal, and yet in a miraculous way, sat up in bed and pointed at me and my sister Jeannie and uttered, "Mother, Mother." We ended with the meeting of my brother, Johnny Buss, in Sedona, and as he was pulling out of the driveway, realizing I finally had the little brother I always wanted. We continue on in the book now. The Gathering. On August 18, 2019, 2 days before my 66th birthday, Ronnie Weinstein hosted an afternoon barbecue at his beautiful home in Newport Beach. By this time, with his easygoing nature, Ronnie and I had developed a friendship via numerous phone conversations, and I felt like I could say whatever was on my mind. I told him that I realized that just because I was the newly discovered Buss child, it was not a guarantee that my siblings and I would be playing Pictionary in the living room by Christmas. But in my wildest dreams, I still hoped it would be possible. Jeannie, Johnny, and Janie each arrived separately. And for the first time in my life, I was surrounded by my biological siblings. Not all of them, of course. Although we had talked on the phone on several occasions, this was my first meeting with Janie in person. First thought, ooh, she is tall. Much taller than I imagined. Definitely the tallest one of us. She floated in like a butterfly, telling a travel story that immediately captured my attention. While the guys were busy with the food, Jeannie, Janie, and I sat down together on the patio, got comfy, and talked about our experiences as children, mystified at how few miles separated us, and yet we had never met. Here we were, separated at birth, and yet we all agreed on some shared experiences. We don't drink enough water. None of us are married anymore. We all have the same shoulder-length blonde hair. Jeannie and I had little white dogs. And when I asked Janie what color dominated her closet, she said black, which made us all crack up because that was true for each of us. We took a group picture, and I marveled at every molecule of resemblance to my newfound family. As the sun was setting in beautiful Newport Beach, my siblings left, one by one, with the promise that we would all meet again soon. As much as I was grateful for being welcomed into the Buss family, I was also feeling overwhelmed, knowing the life I had missed. Being with my siblings was so much fun, and as I went to sleep that evening, I wanted to be Marie Buss, with all the excitement, status, and wealth that the name and family would have brought to me. Seeing my siblings together, talking with them, enjoying conversation with them made me want to just jump in and pretend I had always been there with them. Ronnie continued to organize and host additional get-togethers, including a Lakers game the season prior to the big NBA championship in 2020, when the world was shut down with COVID. Everything was going better than I could have imagined, but there were some days I couldn't seem to get out of bed, and I didn't know why. One afternoon, during a long conversation with my friend Peggy, I poured out my feelings. She helped me to understand what I was going through in a simple but profound way. After listening patiently, she said, "You are Lee Close. End of story." There is nothing like a good friend who can see you for who you are and love you for it. While my self-imposed idleness may have been a delayed reaction to counteract all the excitement of finding my birth family, in time I began to understand and accept that, as much as I might have wanted to turn back the clock and live a different life, this would never be possible. And I realized how much I would have missed by giving up the life I had, all the hard-won struggles and joys of my childhood and beyond, all the tiny details that, when added together, made me the person I had become, and I didn't want to lose any of those memories. The good ones and the not-so-good ones. They all count, you know. Chapter 19, The Dream and the Goodbye. There is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you. Maya Angelou. The summer of 2019, one of the hottest and driest on record in Arizona, finally passed. One night, just after Thanksgiving, I had a vivid, full-color dream about my birth mother, Joanne. I recorded it in my journal as soon as I woke up. Last night, I had a dream that I met my birth mother as a much younger woman. As I recall the dream, she seemed to be in her early 20s, and I was about the same age. There were no other siblings yet, but there were other women in the same house. Perhaps they were her sisters. There are three. Because I felt the relationships were intimate. The house was nondescript, and the room we were in was small, and you could even say it was cozy. But I cannot recall any distinct furniture or pictures, etc., other than a spinet piano in one corner. She was happy in spirit and seemed quite busy, not really sitting still, as though she might be going somewhere soon. I saw myself in her, recognized my physical qualities in her face. And I was also happy in spirit and uplifted that I had this opportunity to see her. The other women in the room were welcoming and somehow knew who I was. Joanne did play the piano and sang for a bit, then worked her way over to me, and we held hands, much like I did with Aunt Susan that first meeting at Olive Garden Restaurant. Then I asked her, "What did it feel like?" referring to when she knew she was going to give me up for adoption. The moment totally froze. There was no reply, and I woke up feeling sad that I had put her in that position. A few weeks after my dream, I flew to Orange County, California for a work conference being held on a Friday. That Saturday, December 14th, Ronnie picked me up at my hotel, along with my friend and coworker. We had been invited to join the opening night event at the Ice House Comedy Club in Pasadena that my brother Johnny had recently purchased. In addition to my two siblings, Johnny and Jeannie, there were several others in our group. Before the show, we went to a nearby Mexican restaurant for dinner and then walked over to the club. Andrew Santino, actor and comedian, was the headliner. His jokes flowed as smoothly as the drinks, and we laughed continuously at his quick-witted candor. Prior to the event, at a photo shoot for a local magazine, Jeannie introduced me as her sister to the photographer, who looked at me hesitantly and asked, "Janie?" Jeannie answered him nonchalantly, "No, this is my other sister, Lee." I was touched by her willingness to describe me in that way. I flew back to Arizona the next day. On a plane, of course. Not that I needed one. Just 2 days later, on December 16th, while I was in the parking lot at my local post office in Sedona, Ronnie called to tell me that my birth mother, Joanne, had passed away that afternoon. I immediately realized that it was exactly 8 months after meeting her on April 16th. What struck me more than anything after Ronnie's phone call was how little time I actually had to meet my mother before she died. Her last years were difficult, with many health issues in addition to Alzheimer's. But I will always wonder if in some way she had been waiting for me. And if so, how fortunate I was she had the courage and the strength to do so. I texted my condolences to my siblings, who immediately texted back letting me know, "She was your mom too." These words were so comforting to me on one of the saddest days of my life because I knew I would never see my birth mother again. The next day, I read the news of her passing on social media and in newspapers. Heartfelt tributes from NBA players, coaches, and family friends about the kindness of Joanne. In the days that followed, I wondered about the reading of her will, but I knew my name would not be mentioned. How could it be? Even though the will would have been written years before the onset of her dementia, why would she open those wounds again by having to explain my adoption to everyone after enduring the years of silence that drove the secret deeper and deeper into her heart and soul? If only she had been able to share her story openly and early with those she loved. At her memorial on January 20th, 2020, I was given the opportunity to see and hear my siblings speak of scenes of childhood and words of kindness for Joanne. I was amazed as Jeannie mentioned that her mother loves See's candies, the gift I always gave to my adoptive mom, too. After the service, I gave my full siblings the poem Ode to Joanne that I had composed almost exactly a year prior to her death while on retreat at the Franciscan Casa. At the gravesite, we were each invited to lay a fresh, beautiful pink rose on her casket. With this gesture, I bid my final farewell to the woman who nurtured me in her womb for 9 months and allowed me my first breath. I will forever appreciate her willingness to do so. Nearing the completion of writing this book, I came across a photograph I had taken of my adoptive mom's grave upon her burial in 2005. I had placed not one, but two pink roses on her grave. I had never noticed this before, and it suddenly became clear to me. It is hard to lose two mothers. Now, in 2022, as I think back on my life, nearing the end of my healing journey through writing this book, I can see two sets of parents, each noble in their own way, each full of hopes and possibilities as newlyweds, each with their own desires and accomplishments, and each with their own set of sorrows. Maddie wanted to be an actress and a dancer. She gave it all up willingly for the man she loved. Joanne wanted to finish her college degree and be a nurse. She gave it all up willingly for the man she loved. Jimmy had the charm, the drive, and the smarts to accomplish his goals. Burdened with ill health as an intermittent obstacle, he never quite gained the success he worked so hard to obtain. Jerry had the charm, the drive, and the smarts to accomplish his goals. Blessed with good health, he became one of the wealthiest and most revered sports owners in history. As for me, I now know my given name is Marie Buss, and that I am the eldest biological child of Jerry Buss and Joanne Buss. I have four full siblings, Johnny, Jeannie, Janie, and Jimmy, and two half-siblings, Joey and Jesse. These are the answers I had been seeking all of my life. Thanks to Ancestry, my genealogical wizard friend, and my maternal cousin helpers, I know my ethnicity, and I can trace my maternal and paternal lineage going back several centuries. I have come full circle. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Lee Close. And now back to the story. My adoptive parents, Maddie and Jimmy, had a series of bad luck befall them. They did the best they could under the circumstances, and I know they love my sister, Christine, and me. Although we sometimes wondered what part we played in their lives, in a strange and inexplicable way, their lifelong enchantment with each other empowered us to seek out our own path. Life was not easy, but as a child, there was a certain richness to poverty that gave me strength on the inside, even when the outside felt like it was crumbling all around me. It became my motivation. During times I felt fear, love was my guardian, and I always believed in better days ahead, even if I took a few wrong turns along the way. Although I did not choose how I came into this world, and heaven only knows when or how I will exit, I have been gifted with plenty of time in between to explore and take risks, make mistakes, and recover from them, and enjoy the unexpected ride. I am wholeheartedly and unabashedly splashing in the cosmos. And life continues to unfold for me. Ronnie hosted another Newport Beach barbecue in September 2021 during a lull in the pandemic. I had more time to spend with Johnny, Jeannie, and Jesse, my youngest half-sibling, who may have the bluest eyes I have ever seen. He is young and full of optimism. Although I'm not well-versed in NBA strategies, I was able to have a delightful and interesting conversation with him about the Western Conference teams and their strengths and weaknesses. Of course, I had to mention the Phoenix Suns. Jesse complimented their energy and unity as a team. I'd like to get to know him better as well, and maybe someday we will all gather in the living room at Christmas, just like I dreamt of as a child. It's a big, beautiful world out there. It's also a fairly accurate guess that Ronnie is working on the next big sibling soiree. Thank you, Ronnie. Afterward. It's not the event, but how you come to the event that makes the difference. Carl A. Hammerschlag, M.D. On January 21st, 2022, Dr. Carl Hammerschlag passed away from a heart condition that had been diagnosed several years earlier. Being able to work with him again, 30 years after our initial therapy session, was a literal miracle. A few months before he passed, we had iPhone FaceTime sessions together, and although there were moments when he was short of breath, he continued to encourage me to stay engaged and to get it all down on paper. We talked about how good it felt that my lifelong journey to find my family was finally resolved, and that I could answer the question, who do I look like? And be able to look at my birth family and say, I see in you a piece of myself. As part of my healing journey, he encouraged me to keep writing my book. And in October 2021, after I sent him the parts I had written about him, he wrote back saying, how wonderful that you're getting your story out and that you're reaching deeper down. And no, it's more than the Buss family. He continued by letting me know that this stuff will all unfold in its own time. Just keep writing and telling it your way and in your own time. In our last written correspondence at the end of October 2021, he gave me the gift I had been looking for nearly my entire life. You are in the flow and doing good work, and whatever its audience, it's going to liberate you in all kinds of ways. With love and blessings, Dr. H. That concludes the reading of the book, Late for the Bus, An Adoption Story. I'm your volunteer reader, Lee Close, and also the author of the book. For the last few minutes we have remaining in the program, I'd like to read an article from adoption.com. The title is Never Too Late, Birth Mother Seeks Out Child, an inspiring story about the adoption process by Janelle Oliveira, February 22, 2021. Birth Mothers. There is never an adoption without that significant human. Adoption stories wouldn't be heard of without the sacrifice of her body, the willingness to shelter a growing baby in her womb for another, the tough and critical decision made in the best interest of her child, the agony and sadness of parting with a piece of her heart, and a great deal of courage. For every adoptive family out there, there is a birth mother intertwined. She is by far the most crucial piece to the adoption triad. She deserves to be recognized. I'd like to share a story with you about a woman I have had the privilege of knowing. She is a woman who has experienced much throughout her lifetime. She has faced many ups and downs, challenges, and losses. She has also taught herself many things, has paved her way to a better life, has many accomplishments, and has found love through the years as well. This woman is a birth mother. She's a birth mother to a son whom she placed for adoption. Many birth mothers, if faced with a closed adoption, spend moments in their lives wondering and worrying about the child they no longer parent. Questions about their well-being can often plague their mind. For Jillian Smith, the woman I mentioned previously, she had some thoughts captivating her over the years. Her son, a beautiful, vibrant child, was voluntarily placed in the state care 38 years ago. At the time, she knew she wasn't capable of parenting him the way she believed he deserved. She knew how fragile recovery was coming from a life of alcohol abuse, and her drive and goals were focused on rebuilding her life. She was working hard to improve her quality of life. She attempted for a bit to manage single motherhood, work, and recovery, all the while trying to further her education in hopes to be the best version of herself she could be. She fought hard to give her son and herself a suitable living environment. She gave all that she could to try and balance everything on her own. With almost no support system standing behind her, a snowball of events took a toll on her and her son. With no way to care for her son, she was facing losing her job, which would result in not being able to make ends meet. Ultimately, the decision became rather clear. Though not easy, she had hopes that he would find his way into a welcoming adoptive family, live a life with all his needs being met, and grow to be a man she could be proud of. Jillian was even more motivated than before to become the individual she knew she could be. Surrendering her son wasn't something that came easy to her or something she took lightly. It fueled her fire to succeed. She would work hard, get the proper education she deserved, and make a name for herself. She wanted to be someone that her son would be proud to call his birth mother. In late 2019, Jillian had a conversation with her terminally ill mother. Before ultimately and sadly passing, they spoke together about the benefits of locating Jillian's son, finding out his whereabouts, his health, the kind of person he had become, and answers to all her plaguing questions might bring peace and quiet to Jillian's mind. Though she stated that she never regretted her decision to place her son for adoption, she did worry and think about him often. Her biggest fears were thinking his life had been less than ideal, that he got caught up in the wrong environment, or that he may have even passed away. The questions and lack of answers were sometimes suffocating, and Jillian realized, through the conversation with her mother, that it was now time to try and find her son. She decided that finding out the reality would be better than always living with the what-ifs, and she would rather face the truth, be it good or bad. Jillian had kept her story with her son a secret from many, afraid to open up the wounds from parting with her birth son all those years ago. She had brushed it under the rug, and only those closest to her, those present at the time, knew of her pain and his existence. By keeping it all to herself, she wasn't able to properly grieve or deal with the emotions of being a birth mother to a child no longer in her care. After her mother passed, she started to progressively reach out and share her story with family and friends, and soon she was seeing tremendous amounts of support. They helped reassure her that she was doing the right thing by trying a search for her son. She was nervous and wasn't sure what to expect, but she knew if it didn't reap rewards, she would have people who she could lean on and who would stand by her side. It was now time to take the leap of faith and begin her search. Locating her son seemed quite overwhelming. She wasn't sure if he still lived in the same state, if the adoptive family had renamed him, or if there was any record to be found. After 38 years, she wasn't sure how he would respond, or even if he would want to get to know his birth mother. He was a grown man, had lived an entire life with his adoptive family, and had never initiated a search on his own. It seemed very daunting, but her mind was made up, and with the encouragement of others, she dived right in. She felt incredibly blessed, and a huge weight lifted off her shoulders when she was able to locate her son just 2 weeks into the search. On the 13th of this month, Jillian and her son will be celebrating the one-year milestone of reuniting. Her expectations of simply finding out if he was okay have surpassed into something quite unexpected. Due to the pandemic, they haven't had as much time in person as they would have liked, but they have shared a few in-person visits as well as many phone conversations. They have also taken to corresponding through letter writing, that they've been able to dive into the past as well as learn about who the other has become. This is all the time we have on the program today. This has been A Good Book with your volunteer reader, Lee Close, on Sun Sounds of Arizona.